On the seventh day of September 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in chapter 4 entitled Transcendental Knowledge, text number 7. Very famous verse. Yada yada hi dharmasya.
Yada yada hi dharmasya.
Glanir bhavati bharata.
Glanir bhavati bharata.
Abhyutthanam dharmasya.
Abhyutthanam dharmasya.
Tadatmanam srijamyaham.
Tadatmanam srijamyaham.
Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharat, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Report. The word Srijami is significant herein. Srijami cannot be used in the sense of creation, because according to the previous verse, there is no creation of the Lord's form or body, since all of the forms are eternally existent. Therefore, Srijami means that the Lord manifests himself as he is. Although the Lord appears on schedule, namely at the end of the Dwapara Yuga of the 28th millennium of the 7th Manu in one day of Brahma, he has no obligation to adhere to such rules and regulations because he is completely free to act in many ways at his will. He therefore appears by his own will whenever there is a predominance of irreligiosity and a disappearance of true religion. Principles of religion are laid down in the Vedas, and any discrepancy in the matter of properly executing the rules of the Vedas makes one irreligious. In the Bhagavatam it is stated that such principles are the laws of the Lord. Only the Lord can manufacture a system of religion. The Vedas are also accepted as originally spoken by the Lord himself to Brahma from within his heart. Therefore, the principles of Dharma, or religion, are the direct orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dharmam tu Sakshad, Bhagavat Pranita. These principles are clearly indicated throughout the Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of the Vedas is to establish such principles under the order of the Supreme Lord. And the Lord directly orders at the end of the Gita that the highest principle of religion is to surrender unto him only and nothing more. The Vedic principles push one toward complete surrender unto him. And whenever such principles are disturbed by the demoniac, the Lord appears. From the Bhagavatam we understand that Lord Buddha is the incarnation of Krishna who appeared when materialism was rampant and materialists were using the pretext of the authority of the Vedas. Although there are certain restrictive rules and regulations regarding animal sacrifice for particular purposes in the Vedas, people of demonic tendency still took to animal sacrifice without reference to the Vedic principles. Lord Buddha appeared in order to stop this nonsense and to establish the Vedic principles of nonviolence. Therefore, each and every avatar or incarnation of the Lord has a particular mission, and they are all described in the revealed scriptures. No one should be accepted as an avatar unless he is referred to by scriptures. It is not a fact that the Lord appears only on Indian soil. He can manifest himself anywhere and everywhere, and whenever he desires to appear. In each and every incarnation, he speaks as much about religion as can be understood by the particular people under their particular circumstances. But the mission is the same, to lead people to God consciousness and obedience to the principles of religion. Sometimes he descends personally, and sometimes he sends his bona fide representative in the form of his son or servant or himself in some disguised form. The principles of the Bhagavad Gita were spoken to Arjuna and for that matter to other highly elevated persons, because he, Arjuna, was highly advanced compared to ordinary persons in other parts of the world. 2 + 2 = 4 is a mathematical principle that is true in the beginner's arithmetic class and in the advanced class as well. Still, there are higher and lower mathematics. In all incarnations of the Lord, therefore, the same principles are taught, but they appear to be higher and lower in varied circumstances. The higher principles of religion begin with the acceptance of the four orders and the four statuses of social life, as will be explained later. The whole purpose of the mission of incarnations is to arouse Krishna consciousness everywhere. Such consciousness is manifest and non-manifest only under different circumstances. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Paramatma. So we began this chapter with a little review of the history of the Bhagavad Gita in human society. Namely, it goes way, way back to when Krishna spoke it to the sun god, and he in his turn spoke it to the Vaibhasvata Manu, his son, who in turn spoke it to Ikshvaku. And Krishna says there that he himself spoke it then. And Arjuna is puzzled, well, how could you do that because you're my contemporary? So this inspired a discussion here about Krishna's appearance, how he appears and now why he appears. So in the last couple of verses, we've learned something about the difference between Krishna's appearance and ours. He appears repeatedly in many different forms, sometimes in his original form here. And as Prabhupada mentions, there's a certain schedule for that, although he doesn't have to follow it, he does. And we're so fortunate. This is one of the things that's so wonderful to learn about this, and that is that it's only been 5,000 years since Krishna personally appeared on this planet. And how often does it happen? Well, a rough calculation of a day of Brahma is what? Is 4,320,000 years per Chatur Yuga, right? For four yugas. 1,000 of those make a daytime. So now we're up to 4,320,000,000. Double it because there's also a night of Brahma. And you get 8,640,000 years. And it's been 5,000 years since Krishna appeared. How fortunate is that? It's like winning 100 lotteries, if we appreciate that. Plus, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared only 500 years ago. We're practically his contemporaries, So we're extremely fortunate when you understand how rare it is that Krishna comes himself and enacts his leela in Vrindavan, speaks Bhagavad Gita, and does all the things that we know. So why he appears. This is a very famous verse, a very important verse. Dharma is what distinguishes human life from animal life. Dharma sahina pashupi samana. It's said in the Hitopadesh that without dharma, we're no more than animals. We share with the animals, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Right? We may do it in a very fancy way, the animals do it in a crude way, but that's, we're doing it. Right? So we have a certain animalistic aspect to us. After all, we've come up through the animal species. Our body also requires these things. But if that's all we have in a fancy way, or that's the full content of our plans and use of our intelligence, it's such a wasted life because we've forgotten about dharma. So dharma is essential for human society and for each human being in society. So knowing what is dharma and what is adharma, first of all, knowing the importance of following some religious principle for elevation, knowing the real purpose of dharma, and knowing how to execute it, is the critical factor. And Srila Prabhupada came to do that, following Krishna's lead. Krishna comes himself to reinstitute dharma when the glani comes in. Glani means discrepancies. So he just said a few verses back that due to the force of time, this science of yoga that I preach, which is the supreme dharma, has become distorted and lost. It's not that it's completely forgotten, but it's not given as it is. It's given in a distorted way, and therefore the real benefit cannot be gotten from it. It's just like the art of medicine. Just imagine if medicine wasn't preserved in so many books and so many hard drives in the minds of so many doctors, then what would happen? It could easily get distorted, right? How much to take of each medicine, the diagnosis principle. You can see how you need genuine doctors. The science has to be given as it is. And that's why we have regulations. You can't just open up an office down the street here and say, oh, come and see me, I'm Dr. So-and-so. No, you have to be certified by the state, right? That means that there's a restriction so that quacks don't take advantage of the people's incredulity. So how much more that should be so for this medicine of Krishna consciousness, which cures the disease of birth and death. But unfortunately, because it's a great mystery, it's not something that can be understood by the material mind, it gets distorted by the force of time. And Krishna has to periodically come, or he wants to periodically come because it's for our benefit, and reinstitute it. So that's what this verse is all about. abhutarma, adharmasya. Adharma becomes rampant. So is that happening now? It certainly is. You know, even 5,000 years ago, at the dawn of Kali Yuga, he saw that it was about to happen. And so did the sages in Naimisharanya. The Bhagavatam is also the same idea. Real devotees of Krishna take on the mission of Krishna as their life and soul. Right? We want to be devotees of Krishna, then we also have to be concerned about all the discrepancies in Dharma. And we want to try to reinstitute the real Dharma, the real Yuga Dharma, you know, which in this age means basically the chanting of the holy names, following in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, now let's go through this purport. Now, Swajami, why does Prabhupada talk about that word? Because Swajami has the same word sarga, you know, sarga and visarga. Sarga means creation. There are two kinds of creation. When Krishna emanates, you know, from Mahavishnu come the universes, and then there's all of these elements, earth, water, fire, ether, mahatattva, prana. This is all called sarga. And what Brahma does after he manifests on the lotus flower, that's visarga, where he actually engineers the planets and the bodies and the species and all of this thing. You know, difficult task. But so sarga, which is also related to this word swajami, means creation. Therefore, Prabhupada immediately explains, following the commentators, that in this instance, swajami doesn't mean creation, because Krishna is not created. He appears, and he appears to be born like an ordinary child to some degree, right? But we should know that he's not created like our bodies are created. Really created, assembled from all of these elements, you see, or like this universe is created. So that's the first statement here. And then there's the schedule, which we just talked about. Once every day of Brahma, and, you know, it's defined which millennium, the 20th millennium, etc. So now, Prabhupada makes the point, who really determines what Dharma is? Well, it's the Lord. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. And it's very, which means that real Dharma must be enunciated by Krishna himself, by the Lord. You can't manufacture it. You know, this is the world we live in. People have their own rules. Or they say that there's ultimately no rule. You have your rules and I have mine. And that, you know, relative ethics or whatever. You know, but that's not, that doesn't help us. In other words, we have a problem. It's not that you can take it or leave it. We have a problem in this world. Every single jiva, every soul has a problem. And the problem is we're separated from our natural home of eternal knowledge, eternal bliss, eternal life. And Vaikuntha, free from all anxiety. Notice how the world is filled with so many anxieties? You know, from childhood, you know, you grow up. I remember as a kid, I was in great anxiety about mostly schoolwork. I was trying to be the top of my class, you know. But just I had all this anxiety. But that, you know, that I wasn't alone. Other kids had so much anxiety about she loves me, she loves me not. He loves me, he loves me not. Right? Isn't that great anxiety? So much so that, you know, if he leaves you or for someone else or vice versa, you feel like committing suicide. As a child, you know, this is the world we live in. And it goes on. It never stops. Maybe there's a few years or weeks maybe when you feel no anxiety or a few hours, but then you're right back into it, the hard struggle for existence. So we need what Krishna has. It's not an optional thing. It's either lifetimes of suffering or learn the Dharma, follow the Dharma, and regain our position of eternal happiness. Now, we may not believe in it. That's also part of the conditioning, doubt. Right? I just know what I can perceive with my senses. You know, that's all I care about. You know? That's animal life. Even just going to school and learning philosophy or what, you know, that's a higher use of the intelligence. You can't even perceive all these. Can you perceive love? Can you perceive anger? You know, in and of itself, can you perceive logical? No, it involves a subtle use of the intelligence. So the whole idea is that Krishna wants to give us a way, give us a chance at least, to come out of the morass of animal existence and to take up real Dharma. So as it is, that phrase as it is key. You know, so many Bhagavad Gitas, but this is as it is. The purports, the meanings, the commentation really far outnumbers the verses, doesn't it? Because that's what we need. We need that explanation So we get it as it is, and that can benefit us. So, Dharma to Saksha, Prabhupada quotes that line, that only Krishna can enunciate Dharma and define Dharma. And so we're nicely situated here. Here's Krishna speaking to us about Dharma, and here's his pure devotee who can understand, explaining to us. So we're very fortunate. He comes in various ways, even as Buddha, different incarnations. The mission is always basically the same. It's always basically the same, to enunciate Dharma, or to save the earth, from some calamity, varaha. It's always a question of concern for the praja. Praja means the citizens of the world, the Krishna's descendants. Aham bija pradakpita. We're Krishna's children. So he's naturally concerned. So it's always a mission of mercy, the avatar. Now, avatar, who knows what avatar means in and of itself, just as a word? Yeah, go ahead.
It means to cross down.
To cross down or descend from higher to lower. Avatar. So now we say incarnation, but that's a kind of a misnomer. Obviously, incarnation has to do with flesh, right? Karn. So we don't say that Krishna takes a body of flesh and blood. We wouldn't say that. Right? No, his body is always spiritual. But this is the word that's used in English, so we use that incarnation. But really, it's not completely accurate. So, but, it's commonly used. It means that he appears in such a way that we can see him and understand. Yes?
Is it accurate to say that we're incarnation?
Yes, definitely. No, yeah, we're definitely incarnation. We're also taking incarnation one after another. Reincarnation, right? But there's nothing transcendental about it. It's just a body. So that's the limits of the language. So he descends from on high with his entourage, not alone, to reinstitute this Dharma. And there's also many levels of it, because there's also the devotees who need to be enlightened. And in that regard, he's enacting his pastimes in Vrindavan and doing so many things, and enlivening them. So... okay, so that's this very important verse worth memorizing. Why Krishna comes, when he comes, yada yada hi dharmasya. And in this age, has he come? Of course he has. Even though he's known as Tri Yuga, by some that he doesn't come in this Yuga, it means that he doesn't come as a Leela avatar, but he still comes as a Yuga avatar. He comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Same reason, to reestablish the real Dharma. Yuga Dharma of the age, which is John. What is that Yuga Dharma? Yes, the Dharma of the age, our main practice that we do in this age to become elevated?
Krishna practice.
Yes. Congregational chanting of the holy name. That's the Yuga Dharma. Sankirtan. Okay, any further discussion on this verse? 8 is also an expansion on this idea. Yeah.
In wanting to perform Sankirtan?
I'm sorry?
In wanting to perform Sankirtan and share Krishna consciousness with others?
Yeah.
How do we present Dharma in a way that doesn't come off this dogmatic or
That's the art, of trying to attract in this age.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There are various ways. One is prasadam. Prasadam is also a preaching tool. It's Krishna's mercy, prasadam. In the form of food. Everybody likes good food. So they come on the basis of the prasadam, they stay to hear the holy name, and they stay to hear the philosophy. And a certain number of people who come on that basis can graduate so that they're not just, appreciating, it's fine, appreciating Krishna on that level. But more important is to advance to the point of really hearing and to have the mind stimulated so that you want to understand. So the paintings. I mean, there were no great paintings in the old Bhagavatams. What to speak of the spoken Bhagavatam. But this artwork Prabhupada was very eager that we do that because people can relate to that. They can see directly windows to the spiritual world, So many ways, the devotee's personality, the chanting, the melodies and the music of the chanting. People get attracted by the music, but they're within the influence of the holy name. If you hear the holy name, it doesn't matter if you understand the meaning or anything. If you hear, if you chant, it will have its effect. Better if you understand. Better if you chant offenselessly. Certainly. But the chanting is so powerful. If it's done purely, then whoever comes into that orbit will be affected. Maybe not so obviously, so quickly, but they'll be affected. And next time they come around, maybe they'll stop to listen. Next time they'll take a pamphlet or a book. You know, this is how Krishna consciousness spreads. We can't expect that it's going to be on our schedule. I think I mentioned this earlier. Back in the 70s, when this movement was expanding so rapidly, we had an idea that, it'll just be a few years, you know, before really we take over. You know, I mean, Haribo, you know. But it didn't quite work out that way, you know. It's not so easy, and Prabhupada understood that, to push back the power of Kali Yuga, which has been developing for a long time. But if you look historically, you know, in the small number, what has it been, 45 years now, right? Certainly the mantra spread all over the world. And I always take great solace from the fact that it's popular, that the chanting become popular. And, you know, all these yoga studios and everywhere, you know, and now the Bhakti Fest, you know, they're going to get so much kirtan. Sachinanda Swami is going to Alachua a week later. You know, they're going to have 12-hour kirtan, you know. Now, maybe much of it is internal, but they have like 18 or so Rathyatras that they do in northern Florida, all over the place. You know, very nice. So there's no one way. The main way is for us to be pure, because purity means that you nicely reflect Krishna through everything you do. It's Krishna who attracts everyone. We have to remember that. He is the all-attractive one. And the purer we are, the purer that we can transmit Krishna's attractiveness. The words, your attitude, you know, the care and attention with which you cook something, which goes into the prasadam, you know, one preparation can convince you to become a devotee. I was a halva addict.
Nice.
Totally. I had to go back. I used to get two half-gallon containers full of halva on the Sunday feast. I thought it would last a week. Didn't last a week. A couple of days later, I had to go back. All right, text it. Paritranaya sadunam, vinashaya chaduskritam, dharma sangstapanartaya, sambhavam yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. Purport. According to the Bhagavad Gita, a sadhu, or holy man, is a man in Krishna consciousness. A person may appear to be irreligious, but if he has the qualifications of Krishna consciousness wholly and fully, he is to be understood to be a sadhu. And duskritam applies to those who do not care for Krishna consciousness. Such miscreants, or duskritam, are described as foolish and the lowest of mankind, even though they may be decorated with mundane education. Whereas a person who is 100% engaged in Krishna consciousness is accepted as a sadhu, even though such a person may be neither learned nor well-cultured. As far as the atheistic are concerned, excuse me, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear as he is to destroy them, as he did with the demons Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons. But the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees, who are always harassed by the demoniac. The demon harasses the devotee, even though the latter may happen to be his kin. Although Prahlad Maharaj was the son of Hiranyakashipu, he, Prahlad, was nonetheless persecuted by his father. Although Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was the sister of Kamsa, she and her husband, Vasudev, were persecuted only because Krishna was to be born of them. So Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than kill Kamsa, but both were performed simultaneously. Therefore, it is said here that to deliver the devotee and vanquish the demon miscreants, the Lord appears in different incarnations. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Krishnadas Kaviraj, the following verses, Madhya 20-63-64, summarize these principles of incarnation. Srishti hetuye murti papanche avatare. Se Ishwar Murti Avatar Namadhare Mayatite Paravyome Sabara Avastam Vishve Avatare Dare Avatar Nam. The avatar, or incarnation of Godhead, descends from the kingdom of God for material manifestation. And the particular form of the personality of Godhead who so descends is called an incarnation, or avatar. Such incarnations are situated in the spiritual world, the kingdom of God. When they descend to the material creation, they assume the name avatar. There are various kinds of avatars, such as Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, Lila avatars, Shakyavesh avatars, Manvantara avatars, and Yuga avatars, all appearing on schedule all over the universe. But Lord Krishna is the primeval Lord, the fountainhead of all avatars. Lord Sri Krishna descends for the specific purpose of mitigating the anxieties of the pure devotees, who are very anxious to see him in his original Vrindavan pastimes. Therefore, the prime purpose of the Krishna avatar is to satisfy his unalloyed devotees. The Lord says that he incarnates himself in every millennium. This indicates that he incarnates also in the age of Kali. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the incarnation in the age of Kali is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who spread the worship of Krishna by the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy names, and spread Krishna consciousness throughout India. He predicted that this culture of Sankirtan would be broadcast all over the world, from town to town and village to village. Lord Chaitanya, as the incarnation of Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is described secretly, but not directly, in the confidential parts of the revealed scriptures, such as the Upanishads, Mahabharata, and Bhagavatam. The devotees of Lord Krishna are very much attracted by the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. This avatar of the Lord does not kill the miscreants, but delivers them by his causeless mercy. So this is kind of the companion verse to Yadaya Dahi Dharmas, yeah? How does he reinstitute Dharma? What does he actually do? So first Prabhupada quotes from the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This was one of his favorite quotes. Who is a sadhu? You know, he would quote, Bhajate mama nanya bhak sadhu eva chamantida. This is like the second and third line of that verse. Apichet suraracharo bhajate mama nanya bhak. Someone may perform some horrible activity, seemingly horrible activity, but if they're fixed in devotion, bhajate mama nanya bhak, they should be considered sadhus. Now, this, you know, what does that actually mean? That's explained in the purport. We won't get into it. But the basic definition here, forget about the part of Apichet Suraracharo, Prabhupada mentions that, is that a sadhu has to be understood by his activities and qualities, as everyone, you know, who is a devotee, who is a Brahmin, and so forth, by quality and activity, not by birth. So a sadhu, we shouldn't be fooled. You know, this is another one of Prabhupada's main missions. Who's a real sadhu? You know, because you're supposed to associate with them, right? And you're supposed to hear from them. So if you accept that you want to hear a sadhu speak so you can be enlightened, then the key element is, who is that sadhu? So the basic definition is the devotee, you know, the pure devotee. Now, just to expand on that, because I discovered, you know, since I discovered this sadhu sanghashtaka by Kapiladev, so we can, a few more definitions of that sadhu. So the first quality, who remembers the first quality? Tatikshiva, karunika. Yeah, at first, Kapiladev says to his mother, in order to open the doors of liberation, if you want liberation from bondage in this world and suffering, and that's kind of a given if you're intelligent, then you have to associate with the sadhus. You have to transfer your affection, your attraction from the things of this world and the people of this world, the ordinary, you know, conditioned souls, to the sadhus. Okay, now if you accept that premise, then what follows next? Who is the sadhu? Where can I find him? Or her, or anything. So that's described in the next two or three verses. Very important. So the first quality, titikshava kaudanika, tolerant. You know, we were speaking about that in the morning class. The Savanti Brahman, he's describing how, by understanding, it's really gyan, you know, in his case, he's understanding himself to be completely aloof from the body, and therefore he's tolerating all kinds of insults and attacks on himself. It just doesn't affect me as a soul, you know. So this titikshava quality means tolerance. And karunika, merciful. It's not just pure tolerance, but it's mercy and tolerance together. Because if you stay cooped up in your room, you know, with the temperature just right and you have a good supply of food, anyone can be tolerant, you know. But if you go out on the street You go out into the forest, you go out into the cities, and you're trying to serve Krishna. Then there's the test of tolerance. So therefore, the Dikshabhakara, Sudadaksarva, Dehinam, the friend of all, has no enmity toward anyone. Again, we're just describing this Avanti Brahman, exactly. And peaceful. Therefore, peaceful. Without material desire, it's understood, and you know, not taking offense, no emotion of enmity and anxiety. That's one of the good. But notice that there's no mention there of devotion. That comes in the next verse. You know. So he says, Maya Nanyanya Bhavena, Mbun Bhaktim, Maya Nanyanya Bhavena, Krite Bhaktim Kurvanti Medhudha. Very firmly fixed in devotion to me. Ananya Bhavin. In other words, unalloyed devotion. So that's an essential part of being a sadhu. And in this state of mind, you know, firmly fixed means that he'll give up anything for the service. Sometimes it means rejecting one's family members, just as Arjun here. He's being asked to kill his family members as his duty to, you know, really to prove that he's surrendered to Krishna. That's the key element. Is he going to do it or not? You know, of course he does. In the end, he surrenders. So that's a very heavy-duty thing. You know, they're willing to give up any activity for my sake that they might be attracted to, or even give up association with their dear ones, if it's an impediment. So then what do they do? Manashriya kata mishta shinvandi katayanti cha. They're always hearing and chanting the sweet vibrations describing me. Manashriya kata. It's a very nice phrase. You know, ashriya means shelter. So the sounds, you know, that take shelter of Krishna, in other words, that are about him, about his devotion service, all of this sound vibration. There's millions of other things you can listen to, but, you know, this is the sound that the sadhus are always vibrating and listening to and relishing, writing and repeating, you know, the writing and listening, reading. And by doing that, because his mother's question was, well, I'm suffering so much, my senses are giving trouble. So he gears his answer to here, and he put, Tapandi vivarastapa naita madgata chetasa. With their minds having gone to me through this sound vibration, madgata chetasa, they don't feel the material miseries. Tapandi vivarastapa naita. They're not, yeah, the same threefold miseries are going on, but their minds are transcendental. They don't suffer as much. After all, the suffering is in the mind, right? I mean, one person, please take these so you can sit on something. Take that if you're going to sit. And so they say they're transcendental to this three, you know, the threefold miseries. And then he goes on how this association, hearing the lila, you know, discussed and hearing the pastimes produces faith. Faith is increased. Faith is essential. And then shraddha, rati, bhakti. If Sharmaya, if you can try not to point that particular foot in my direction.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Hare Krishna. I know you have a problem with that leg. So, anyway, it goes on like that. So that will expand on the sadhu. But the main thing is that association ultimately culminates, if you do it properly, in pure devotion to Krishna. You see? Okay, that's all right. All right. So, going on here. And what does he say? You know, he doesn't really need to appear in order to kill the demons. The demons can be killed by the material energy or any of his agents. So, but when Krishna comes, the Vishnu form merges with Krishna, and he really kills the demons through them. Krishna's only activity as Krishna, as the threefold bending form of the flute, is enjoying the pastimes with his devotees. All the others are done by his expansions, like Nrisingadev, you know, incarnation of anger. Fury at the tormenting of his pure devotee. So that's Krishna. He's fully as powerful as Krishna. He doesn't manifest all the qualities of Krishna. The beauty, the flute, the dancing, and no, you don't hear about Nrisingadev doing that. But he annihilates, you know, him through Nrisingadev. And similarly, even when Krishna comes in 5,000 years ago, and you know, the killing of those demons that he does so often in Vrindavan, if you read the Vrindavan Lila, that's all being done by kind of the Vishnu expansion, even though it, you know, it's described by Krishna. That's from the Acharyas. Krishna's only business is enjoyment, you know, with his friends, his parents, gopis, like that. So that's also part of his mercy, enacting those pastimes, you know, to enliven his devotees. Another verse he describes in the 10th canto, Anugrahaya bhaktana manasam dehim ashitaha bhajate tadrushi kridha yashutva tatparo bhavet. A very nice verse. So, out of my compassion for my devotees, here I come in my original human form. Anugrahaya bhaktanam manusham deham ashritaha. I kind of take shelter, you know, or I manifest in this human form. Then what do? Bhajate tadrushi krida. I enact those krida, those lila, which when one hears them, they'll become attracted to surrender to me. Now, that's described, this word bhavet is an imperative. In other words, it's a duty to become attracted to Krishna. It sounds like a contradiction, but that's the fact. We need to place ourselves in a position where we can become attracted to Krishna. That was Prabhupada's whole mission. You know, they don't know anything. Okay, so I'll try my best, you know, to give out this philosophy and the holy name, you know, and I get a little money, a little followers. Okay, we'll have feasts, you know, books, painting, festivals, everything. Somehow or other, so attract the people to come within the orbit of Krishna's name and devotees and prasadam and deity and all of the things that they can become attracted. So it's our job as devotees to knock down the barriers that are preventing us from being attracted to Krishna. The soul in its natural form is just like an iron filing is attracted to a magnet. That was Prahlad's analogy. There's no way he can stop thinking of Krishna. You know? This is what he's saying. You know, they're trying to beat it out of him. He's just a little child, the demonic teachers, his father, you know. But he's completely attracted, you know, just like you read, you know, Krishna book. So why aren't we completely attracted? Because we got too much static. You know, we're still hanging on to all the non-Krishna stuff. And that makes, you know, we can't be attracted to Krishna as much as we really intrinsically are, the living entity. So bhakti yoga is a matter of purifying the heart. It's almost like, have you ever had a kitchen sink, you know, that can get stains on it, and you got to pour a lot of the Clorox or whatever it is, you know, the cleanser on it, you get the rubber, you know, and you get a lot of elbow grease, and, you know, and it's like chanting the holy name, Jeto Darbha Namarjanam. We have this lust-encrusted mirror of the heart, right? It's encrusted on for many, many millions of years, and we have to get it off by a lot of chanting, a lot of hearing, with a focused mind. And even when we don't want to, you still do it, you know, regularly, more and more, until gradually the heart becomes purified and softened so that it becomes more attracted. That holy name, which is now like a cleanser, you know, becomes the sweetest nectar to us. The mind is purified. That's our natural state. You know. So Krishna is coming in order to enliven the devotees with his lila and all of these things and protect them. From the demons, and also dharma sangstapanartaya, the same idea, establish dharma, to reestablish dharma because it's been distorted and lost due to the force of time. Okay, and he mentions Lord Chaitanya, of course, as the incarnation of Krishna for this age, giving the dharma in a way that can be accepted and is feasible for us, you know, and that is his chanting. You know, it's such a wonderful gift. Just chant, you know? chant, dance, and you'll find, you know, yourself connected to Krishna. You know? But, you know, chant, can't, you know, Prabhupada. Okay, any questions on this verse? My Krishna comes. Where are we? Okay, we have one more. Now, the next verse is one of the most quoted in the whole Bhagavad Gita by Prabhupada. Certainly worth memorizing. Janma karma cha me divyam. Evaṁ yo veti tatpataḥ chaktvā deham punarjanma naiti māṁ eti sojana. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Purport. The Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the sixth verse. Okay, sixth verse. What? That was Ajopisana Biyatma, how he appears by his own internal energy. Sambhavanyatmaya. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage, and therefore he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present material body. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalists and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. Even then, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahma-jyotir of the Lord, is only partial, and there is the risk of returning to this material world. But the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body and does not run the risk of returning to this material world. In the Brahma Samhita 5.33, it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations. Advaitam achyutam anadim ananta rupam. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction, although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers. As stated in the Vedas, Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, Eko Devo Nitya Lila Anurakto Bhaktya Vapi Ridyantaratma. The one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationships with his unalloyed devotees. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculations, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. The Vedic version, Tattvamasi, is actually applied in this case. So Tattvamasi is, thou art that. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, in other words, it's not that we are that, but Krishna is that. We can say this to Krishna. Look at the deity and say, Tattvamasi. But the Maitreya say, oh, you are all that. You're all Brahman, Supreme. That's a mistake. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, or who says unto the Lord, you are the same Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead, is certainly liberated instantly, and consequently his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. In other words, such a faithful devotee of the Lord attains perfection, and this is confirmed by the following Vedic assertion. Tameva viditvati mrityumeti nanyak panta vidyate yanaya. One can attain the perfect stage of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. Shvetashvata Upanishad 3.8. That there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance, and consequently he will not attain salvation simply, so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed-up mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the devotee of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and in this way attain perfection. So, kind of the foundation, you know, the foundation of our whole faith and our whole practice of Krishna consciousness is simply this one phrase in English, which you can probably understand. Krishna is God. You know? Now, that's not an easy thing to accept. For many people, I was thinking of like a Sunday feast lecture sometimes. You could say Krishna is God or God is Krishna. There is a slight difference in, but let's leave it at God is Krishna. So much of Prabhupada's preaching is just coming to the point of God is, that there is a God, you know, that there is a spirit and there's a supreme spirit, there's a source of everything. There's a lot of that. But then to understand that God is Krishna, or Krishna is God, that's the foundation of everything. The whole philosophy. Jiva Goswami, our greatest philosopher and often said to be the greatest philosopher who ever lived, wrote these Shat Sandarbhas. Shat means six. It's a different word entirely than Sat. That's where you've got to get the pronunciation. Shat means six. Six Sandarbhas means six philosophical treatises. Okay, the first one, called the Tattva Sandarbha, is simply there to establish the Srimad Bhagavatam as the ultimate pramana. Who remembers what a pramana is, otherwise, other than Nityagaur? Anyone? Pramana means a source of evidence. Because this word is used at the end of the 16th chapter. And we may not realize it, but everybody has a source of evidence for what they believe, where their faith lies, what they're going to do with their life, and so forth. For most people, their own senses are their biggest source of evidence. Very poor idea for what is good. what to speak of what is beyond the limits of the senses. How can the senses be an authority for that? You see the problem? So anyway, there are various sources of pramana. At least in the India, in the East, they understand, well, we need books of knowledge, you know. But which ones? Well, there's the Vedas, there's the Puranas, there's the Smriti, there's the Vedanta Sutra, there's the Mahabharata, there's the Ramayana. Where do we look? Do we just figure it out on our own? How about the Upanishads? Which Upanishads? You see, it's a problem. You need to have a guidance as to which is the ultimate pramana. So Jiva Goswami, in his great erudition, he establishes in the Tattva Sandarbha that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the ultimate pramana for finding out what is dharma, which we're talking about here, what is the absolute truth, the cause of all causes, what is the means of understanding how to reach that, what is our ultimate good, all of these questions that any human being should ask. It's Srimad Bhagavatam Purana. So he establishes that in the first Purana. In the second Purana, excuse me, second Sandarbha, he speaks about the essential essence of phrase or statement in the Bhagavatam, which is called the Paribhasa Sutra, which is everything else is built on that. The essence of the essence of the essence, you know. Bhagavatam itself is Sadam Sadam, the essence of the essence of all the Vedas. But what's that essential statement in the Bhagavatam that everything is built on? Ete Chansa Kala Pungsa Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. That Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam simply means, as I said, Krishna is God. God in the fullest sense of Bhagavan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Prabhupada's robust phrase, which means fully possessing and manifesting all the six opulences that are spoken of by Parashara Muni. Namely, Aishwarasya Samagrasya Vyasya Yashakshya Jnana Vagirashchaiva Shannam Bhagahitingana. This is the statement of Parashara. Aishwaryasya, opulence, controlling power. Samagrasya, complete. Total. We have controlling power. We have a little control over our bodies. We may have a little money in the bank, you know. But what, samagrasya? All of it. He who has complete opulence or wealth, strength, fame, shriya, beauty, knowledge, and detachment from it all. Because he's completely Atmarama. So Krishna has all these. So does Nisringadeva. So does Ramachandra, but only Krishna manifests them in full in his Leela. You understand the difference? Nisringa manifested the power. You know, be more powerful than him. Viryasa, you got it. You know, but the Shriya, he's beautiful. You know, I'm not going to say he's not, but not like Krishna. Not that breathtaking beauty that Krishna manifests in Goloka, in Braja, in Gokula. You see what I'm saying? So that all attractive form. You know, Radha Krishna, that is actually the Supreme Personality of God. That's the foundation of this Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Krishna is God. So, that's what this verse is all about. One who can understand my birth, my Leela, you know, in truth, the transcendental nature of them, in other words, who can really understand me, then they come to me. You know, we know something about Krishna's birth and Leela, but do we understand in full the transcendental nature of it? No. But if we can, then we give up this body, we'll go to Krishna. So this is a very nice verse, Prabhupada talked about it. Liberation, not such a difficult thing. Just understand Krishna's birth and activities. Whereas these impersonalists, Prabhupada's referring to a verse here in the second chapter, 10th canto, often reversed, how only Krishna consciousness can give real liberation. Liberation is kind of the coin of the realm. If you're at all intelligent, you have to want to get out of this prison house of birth and death, you know, if there's a way of doing it, you know. Okay, well, then all we have to do is become detached from everything, right? We have to repress those senses and, okay, let's go off to the forest, to the caves, and I'll just grit my teeth, repress, and meditate on Brahman. This is the impersonalist strategy. But it fails. Even if somehow they can rise up, the very few who have the strength of will, to control those mad senses and that mad mind, you know, and rise up to Brahman, then they say, Aru akuchena padang padang tada patanchyadho. They fall down again. Because it's not natural for the soul. The soul wants relationship. The soul wants singing and dancing. The soul wants love. The soul wants activities. So you want to eat, you know. You want all the activities that there are there in Krishna consciousness in relation to Krishna. But to throw all that out as Maya, which is what the Maya bodies do, that leaves the soul bereft, you know, just to understand I'm free of all pain. Wonderful, wonderful. Is that real life? It's like you're in the hospital. You know, oh, if I could just get free, you know, you're in traction, you had an accident. Oh, my foot aches. You know, gradually your leg comes out. Oh, then I'm getting better, I'm getting better. If I could just get out, you know, I get out of this bed, you know. Then finally you get out, you walk out of the hospital, and there you are, you're out of the hospital. You're cured. Is that it? That's all you wanted in life? No, then you have a whole life to lead. You're just going to sit down on the curb and be out of the hospital? You see the difference? So the devotees, we want to get out of the hospital, but we want to enter into the paradise for activities. We want to be out of the prison, but into the eternal world. So that comes from understanding Krishna's Leela. So we have 1 minute, so I thought I'd end with something sweet. Maybe we'll make this a new tradition, some little poem. Hare Krishna. So, one poem about the holy name. We'll see how far we get. I'm sorry, I should have left a little more time. You never know. This is a Kevalashtaka. It's a poem about the holy name. I'll just do the English. Of sweet things, it's the sweetest you will taste at any time. Of things that bring good fortune, it's the perfect paradigm. Of things that purify, it purifies most powerfully. The holy name of Shri Hari is surely all that be. From Brahma's realm atop the sky, down to the lowly grass, illusion reigns in Maya Devi's treacherous morass. The truth, the only truth, the name of Shri Hari. The holy name of Shri Hari is surely all that be. He's the guru, he's the father. He's the friend most true, and she's the real mother who most kindly teaches you to always chant and hear the holy name of Shri Hari. The holy name of Shri Hari is surely all that be. All right, we'll skip to the last one. It makes this world appear like bits of straw upon the ground. Resplendently it reigns supreme, divinity in sound. It's filled with transcendental bliss and peerless purity. The holy name of Shri Hari is surely all that be. Hare Krishna. All glories to Shri Hari.